Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. Keeping your relationship not just together, but happy, and we mean truly happy, is part art and part science. You've come to the right place. Here's your host, Leslie Dorries.
There are plenty of studies that show one of the worst things that can happen to a marriage is the birth of a child. Marital satisfaction takes a steep dive during the child-rearing years and doesn't really recover until the children leave home. Unfortunately, many marriages don't survive that long. And I believe that the main reason for this is that the marriage gets put on autopilot and the focus shifts from partnering to parenting. Now, some of this is completely understandable. Babies are completely helpless and require intense amounts of time and attention. The habits that you, as a couple, develop in those first few years can be very difficult to break. And in addition, over the last 50 years, our culture has become completely child-centric. Everything that an adult and parent does is supposed to be done for the sole purpose of making their child happy. And during the same 50-year time period, divorce has become much more common and fewer people are actually getting married in the first place. This increase in single parenting puts a lot of stress on both the children and the parents, especially moms. I cannot tell you the number of women I have seen in my office that have completely lost touch with who they are. When I suggest that they need to take time for themselves, they look at me like I'm speaking a completely foreign language. One thing they tell me is that they have no time. This goes back to the position that their children, and sometimes their husbands, need to come first. And when I ask them why this is, they don't have an answer. So joining me today to talk about how and why women get into this position is Vicki Larson. She's a Huffington Post columnist and the author of The New I Do, Reshaping Marriage for Skeptics, Realists, and Rebels. Now, Vicki, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Well, and one of the reasons why I wanted you on the show is because I read your recent post on your OMG Chronicles that says, "Is it okay if moms abandon their kids?" Which, I love the title. It's grabbing. And it hit home for me because of the bind that women seem to be in these days. So how do we get here?
Well, that is a really good question. As you mentioned when you started the show, that we have put our focus on children and the children's needs, it is as if a mother's needs must come, last, because she can't be a good mother if she's not attending to her children's every need and desire, even above her romantic partner's. And so it is like the more we hear that kind of thing, the more we internalize it, and the more we internalize it, the more we act on it, and it becomes a kind of a vicious circle, really.
Yeah, because one of the things that you wrote, it was a quote from, let's see if I can get her name right, Rana Rico Rizzuto, who wrote Hiroshima in the Morning, and this is what grabbed me. This quote right here that you put in here, I was like, okay, I got to call Vicki. "We want our mothers to be long-suffering, to put their children's needs first and their own well-being last if there is time left." And I'm going, no.
I know, and it goes really counter to what makes for a healthy parenting, which is, the airbag test in the airplane.
Right.
You're told, put your air mask on first, and then attend to your children, because you're not going to be able to do anything good for your children and try and save them if you have already lost all your air. So if you apply that to the way we live our lives, if we take care of our needs and we make sure that we are doing what we need to do to be centered, to be less stressed, to be happier and healthier, we actually are better parents and we're better partners. And we don't harbor resentments and all of the things that happen in a marriage that very often lead to either divorce or A sexless, loveless marriage.
Right. Yeah. Just a miserable marriage. They're
right.
staying together for the sake of the kids, and the kids are going, please don't do that.
Right. Yeah.
But, you know, this kind of goes to the whole mommy wars, you know, working mothers versus stay-at-home moms. And I just say, well, okay, you're still a working mom. You just don't get paid for it.
Right.
You know, I mean, why do women do this to each other? Because I don't think the guy now I think guys will let us do it, but I'm not sure they're the ones behind this.
No, I don't think the men are behind this. I think the women sadly are behind it, just as back in the days when they were binding little girls' feet. It was done for men, but it was the mothers and the grandmothers who were doing it. They were destroying their own daughters, and only if they had said, no, we're not going to do this, then they would make a stand. I don't know really why women feel a need to do that. I think we've become kind of competitive parenting in a way.
Absolutely.
And then who is a good mom? A good mom, you know, Ayelet Waldman, who just infuriated women a number of years ago. I don't know why, when she wrote an essay in the New York Times, I believe, saying that she loves her husband more than her children. Her husband is novelist Michael Chabon.
Mm-hmm.
And people were just freaking out. And she wrote a book about a bad mommy, about, you know, you can't be a good mom if you're not baking the cupcakes to bring to school, to, you know, to take your children to and fro and go to every single game and every dance rehearsal. It's my mother didn't do that. You know, I'm
well,
a boomer.
Neither did mine.
Right.
Neither did mine.
And it's become, you have very intelligent mothers who are able to, you know, these are women who have had big time careers, who maybe are staying at home now, raising the children or staying home or working flex time or part time.
Right.
And this, you know, kind of, competitive or aggressive kind of approach to things, they've seemed to have taken to the playgrounds and the schoolyards, because we're so confused about motherhood. You know, in my mother's day, maybe in your mother's day, women had very clear roles.
Right.
Right?
Which wasn't necessarily a good option either. It almost seems like they were pigeonholed back then in a slightly
yes,
different
way. Yes, they were.
Way.
As were the men. Men
yeah.
had to be breadwinners. It was just a very narrowly defined way of the world. Women were this, men were that, and it didn't help either gender. It's just that it made things easier in a way, which is sad to say, but your expectations were known.
Right.
We
right.
nowadays don't have that, although still if you choose to be child-free, there's a lot of judgment around that. If you try to have just one child, then there's a lot of judgment around that. If you want to have your children, you know, later, it's judgment about – everyone seems to be judging everyone for whatever their private decisions are. But when our roles were clearly defined, it was a little bit easier. And now, because we don't really – know what quote unquote is a good mother anymore, or we can't agree to it. It's created a lot of confusion, and I think it's made everybody really unhappy, including the kids.
Oh, well, absolutely. Well, because I think it puts a lot of pressure on the kids, because I think the kids know, and I said this in a previous show, and I'm certainly hoping that my friend does not — this is one person I don't want listening to my podcasts. because she said to her daughter, and her daughter relayed this to me, mm-hmm. that her mother said that my children are my life.
Oh, boy.
And mm-hmm. it's creating some serious issues, because the children are now all adults, mm-hmm. and they're trying to leave, and there's a real push-me-pull-you
Yes.
Because they feel responsible for her, which is completely backwards.
Yes. It's not a healthy dynamic. You wouldn't want your spouse to be your whole life, and you certainly don't want your children to be your whole life. The normal, you know, the way that children can go on and be functioning adults is to break away from their parents.
Right.
You know?
Yes, and they're supposed to go.
Yes. And you know, if you give them the freedom and the support to go and be their own people, well, they will love and appreciate you in return. That's the bonus. But if you micromanage them, they're not going to be able to function very well. And it often leads to, you know, extensive therapy at some point. You know, we've historically, you know, seen, you know, everyone wants to blame it on the mom, you know.
Well, so. Yes, right. I mean, and I guess part of that, you have to go back to Freud, which is somebody who, anybody who knows anything about him just goes, oh, gosh, don't listen to anything he has to say. But
yes.
But why do we accept this? I mean, I remember when my daughter, who's now in college, was in preschool.
Mm-hmm.
And I would come pick her up at the end of the day, and everybody goes, it's Jenna's mom, it's Jenna's mom. And I'm going, yeah, no, I have an identity of my own. Yes, I'm Jenna's mom, but that is not my sole identity.
Yeah.
So why is it that some of us can break away from, you know, some of these requirements, and I use that in quotes, you know, that, and other people get caught up in, no, we have to do it this way because, you know, Jane down the street is, you know, this, and Susan up the other way is that, and Judy at the office does it this way, and I'm the only one kind of, yeah, no, I'm not playing that game.
Well, you know, I don't want to certainly blame it on the internet, but I will say that things like Facebook, where people are posting photos of their family and their happy times, this and that, I mean, there's been some studies recently about the anxiety that creates for some people,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I think, you know, if you buy into that that maybe other people are doing something right and we better be doing that too. And also the huge growth of self-help books, which just makes us doubt our own abilities and thoughts about things. It just makes us anxious. You look at all of the advice that's online, including like the Huffington Post, whatever, Women's Magazine.
Right.
Mm-hmm. 10 things that you must do now, 7 tips to, you know, this and that. And it just makes us doubt ourselves. We doubt our abilities as a mom, as a spouse, as a friend, as a everything. And I think if you really are a little bit anxious about some stuff, and who isn't anxious when you're parenting, right?
You know, right.
It can lead people to, you know, feel very threatened by other people's happiness or threatened that they're not doing it right. And if they don't get in the right school and this and that and the college, then
right.
their child is going to fail, and that's going to be a reflection of them as a parent.
But, you know, I'm hearing what you're saying, and I did kind of conflate these two statements in my opening, and there's a part of me that wonders if they're a little bit connected, that we've gotten so child-centric
mm-hmm.
at about the same time that that divorce has become more acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I'm wondering, and I'm enough of a scientist to know that a correlation doesn't imply causation, but I'm wondering if there isn't some of that coming into play, that, you know, this anxiety, I don't know whether it's a nasty feedback loop that we get anxious about our kids, spend more time on our kids, less time in our marriages, therefore the marriages get less connected, less focus, less time, and then they end, so then we're left with the kids. I mean, I'm not quite sure how to tease all of this out, but, and not that I want to go back to the days where you couldn't get divorced if you needed to, but I'm wondering if this, and I know you do a lot of social research, I don't know if you've come across any studies that kind of tie these things together.
Well, I would hate to say that, you know, divorce and the acceptance of divorce is somehow connected to it, and I don't think that arguments, you know, that kids are necessarily the number one reason that a lot of people divorce. But yes, there have been studies that said, you know, the first 2 years of a baby's life are the most stressful for couples, and it's when marital satisfaction plummets. And I do remember reading one study that men tend to, it lasts longer for men than just the 2 years. I think because we have this complicated thing of mom. We all have mom. And also, well, typically it impacts a parent's sex life. So you're starting off with all of that. And some families bounce back from that better, depending on, I have to say that I'm looking at some of my younger coworkers. They're in their 30s, early 40s, and they are so much more shared, hands-on parenting happily that I'm just very encouraged when I see that. And I'm not that much older than they are, but I feel generationally quite different. So I think that there's a shift now, and I'm hopeful that we will see less of that arguing about kids and more of the kids connecting. I'm not really sure.
Okay. Well, you're listening to Happily Ever After is Just the Beginning on webtalkradio.net. I'm Leslie Dorries, and I'm talking today with Vicki Larson about what's behind women accepting roles that are ultimately harmful to them and their relationships. And Vicki, I'm really glad to hear that you're seeing this firsthand in a younger generation, because you also point out in your blog post talking about that men are capable of being good parents. And it's a question of how do couples manage those first 2 years? I used to joke because, and I love my husband, and he's wonderful. And when I would do my kids' drawers, you know, put their clothes away in their dresser, I would put the outfits that went together. And inevitably, my husband would get one of the kids dressed, help one of the kids get dressed, and they would come down in very interesting combinations. And I would just kind of look at it and go, well, okay, they're not getting their picture taken today, or we're not going anyplace special, so they're seasonally appropriately dressed. Who cares? But I know that that's not true of a lot of people, that their children have to be just so.
Yeah, and you bring up, I mean, they're... The dads don't seem to mind. Why do the moms mind? And I think part what often you see in marriages is that mothers micromanage and don't really trust that their husbands can feed their kids right, dress them properly, bathe them properly. And that is... That's sad. And in looking at, you know, when I was talking to people whose mothers had abandoned them, you know, the flip side of looking at that is saying, but the dads raised them and they raised them well, and isn't that a good thing? If men give up custody of their children, they're not vilified. If mothers do it, they're vilified. It goes against what we think a good mom should be, but at the same time, we don't really have a lot of requirements for a good dad. All he has to do is show up.
Show up, right.
And that, well, that doesn't give men a lot of credit for the many wonderful ways that they educate.
Well, that they parent.
And play.
Absolutely.
Yes, yes.
Absolutely.
And study after study has talked about how they do it. The children get wonderful things from dads. And so we should be encouraging that as a society.
Well, and you actually quoted somebody else in your blog post. And again, I love this because this was Melissa Sestaro.
Mm-hmm.
And she was quoting, she's talking about that she was one whose mother had left her when she was younger, but she said, I can relate to my mother's irrepressible desire to be free of everyone and everything. Though I love my children passionately, I leap at opportunities for time away from them. I read that and I went, yes, because I don't travel very often by myself, but when I do, it's kind of cool. Because for a couple of days, I don't hear honey and I don't hear mom.
Yeah.
I just get to be me with my own schedule. And it's not that I don't love my husband or love my kids. I do, but it's feeding me.
Yes. I remember there was a poll that I think Parenting Magazine did a few years ago, and they polled about 1,000 moms, and it was called Mad at Dad, and there were so many women who said that on a daily basis they were angry at their husbands, and part of the reason was because the men could just go off and golf and do this and that. And I'm thinking, is that gender related? I mean, can't you just go off and golf if you want to or do whatever it is that you want? I think women put this pressure on that they have to be there all the time. I know I did in my marriage with my kids. And in retrospect, I'm like, I don't know why I felt that way. I don't know, but I felt like I needed to be there, and I wish I wasn't. I wish I went away more. I wish that
right.
I took that time for myself. And I think men give themselves permission to do that, and I'm baffled by women, by why women don't feel the same way, to say, I'm going to this yoga retreat, or I'm doing this.
Right.
I'll see you on Monday, and just do that.
Yeah.
And not feel guilty about it.
Well, yes, it's to not feel guilty about it. And I think that because I don't know who's calling them selfish. I don't know if women are calling themselves selfish or whether they think somebody else is. And I don't think this whole sacrificing yourself for the sake of the children is necessarily a good thing, and it's what I've asked some of my clients, because I've actually had women whose husbands are in my office, and they're going, no, we've been trying to tell, I've been telling her for years she needs to go take a class or go out to lunch with friends or do whatever, and she's like, But then I have to leave the children. And it's like, okay, well, it's not like you're leaving them in the park by themselves.
Yeah.
I grew up being left in the park, my mother would send us to the park. It's like, go away.
I know. There is like more, the parents who had, the free-range kids.
The free-range parents.
Which is what that was just what we grew up with. I grew up in New York City. I was gone for hours when my mother had no idea where I was. No cell phone to call me and go, where are you? I said, I'm going to Rebecca's house. And she said, okay, be home for dinner at 6. And
right.
There
and
I
you
went.
Were.
And I was gone for hours. She had no idea where I was, but I was at Rebecca's house. And then I came home for dinner. And
right.
we're constantly checking where our kids are, and it creates an anxiety, and it hampers the kids. And I just came upon, there was a recent research that said that the amount of time the kids' parents spend with their young kids makes no difference in how they turn out. And the research said kids actually suffer when parents, particularly moms, are sleep deprived, guilty, and
right.
anxious. So,
well, and angry.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Because, you know, it's one of the things that I see, and I don't know if it's from this idea that young women, and when I was 19, I was stupid, and all I can say is thank goodness neither one of my college boyfriends proposed to me. Lucked out, way lucked out. Because I would do anything, you know, whatever, well, within reason, but to try to please them, but I never required it back. And I'm wondering if that's when it starts. Is it somehow we get the idea that it's not okay to have our own wants and desires and require, not demand, but require that they're included in the equation?
Mm. Well, you know, typically, and again, we're making some generalizations
right.
here, but very often women are girls are raised to be pleasers, you
yep.
know, and which is really, you know, inauthentic if you're not talking about your needs and wants.
Right.
Judge Lynn Toler from Divorce Court calls it the false okay.
Mm-hmm.
When women say to, you know, typically their romantic partners, no, it's good, it's okay.
Right.
It's not
and
okay.
It's not
okay, and she's not expressing herself. So are we teaching our daughters to do that, and are we, you know, not, and I hate this word, empowering them to have needs and express those needs, and that it isn't selfish? There's a difference between taking care of yourself and being a selfish person, and it's
right.
not selfish to take care of your needs. It's your health, mental
right.
and physical, and sexual, which is often women,
right.
you know, are not told, you know.
right. Yeah. That's a topic for another
that's
day.
That's a topic on another day. But so these messages seem to be coming from parents, perhaps, society, perhaps, we internalize it, and then it just becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Well, and just kind of as a diversion, because it's also what women will put up with physically. I love all the conversation now about dad bods and whether they're okay versus mom bods and what women do. And I was at the gym the other day. I do CrossFit, so I was working out in the morning, and one of the other women was going, shoot, it's getting warm. I'm going to have to start shaving more often. And I just started cracking up because it's like, okay, here's another woman who doesn't spend the winter time, you know, shaving her legs every day because I wear pants and nobody's going to see them. And frankly, my husband doesn't care. so I thought, yes, you know, but all this talk about, you know, whether men get to be lazy, and I'm going, well, who said we couldn't be?
I know. Again, I think it's just the standards that we set upon ourselves and some that comes from society of how a woman should look, how a woman should act. I mean, we have those expectations that amount to, but
right.
we tend to get very anxious about it. We really do. And I would advise all women stop reading women's magazines. They don't help.
As long as they don't stop reading your column, right?
Right, therefore, yes, exactly.
Keep reading Vicky, but don't read anybody else.
That's right.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's so crazy sometimes, and I just, you know, I wonder how I manage. I still to this day don't know how I manage to get off that particular merry-go-round. Maybe it's the guy I married. I don't know. But, you know, I tell my clients that it's you're only being selfish if you don't take into account anybody else's needs or desires.
Yeah.
You're not selfish if you add yours into the equation and then figure it all out.
Right. Yeah, and that message gets kind of confused and convoluted, and taking care of needs, and then, you know, people will say, oh, it's, you know, it's the me, you know, it's the me generation, it's me, me, me. But that's not it. There's a difference. There's a difference. You do have to take care of yourself. Who else is going to do that? What you're saying, if you're not taking care of yourself, are we expecting other people to take care of us? Who's is anyone taking care of us? I mean,
well, and I think that's what's behind the anger that women feel against their husbands, is that they want their husbands to take care of them, but how are their husbands supposed to know when the wives say, no, honey, it's okay for you to do this? Why would they think it wasn't okay? Because men don't do that. Men, generally speaking, now I do know exceptions, but generally speaking, men won't say it's okay if it's not okay.
Right, right. Or they do the yes, dear, which is just a resignation of this is
which
an
makes
argument
me crazy.
I'm not going to, yes. But, you know, and it's dishonest, too.
Right.
And there, sometimes women set men up for that, not intentionally, but by the way, you know, we interact. Yes.
Well, you know, I wish we could solve this, because there are so many people that are so unhappy because they think that sacrifice, and I tell people that is not a word I use in relation to marriage, and I really don't use it in relationship to any relationship. I mean, the times that we actually truly have to sacrifice for another person are really rather rare. I mean, if somebody's going hungry and you've got food, or somebody's, I mean, was it the couple in Oklahoma that saved their baby during the tornado and they lost their lives? I mean, that kind of thing is sacrifice. But on a day-to-day basis, I don't think sacrifice is required. And I really think that people who do that are setting themselves up to be really unhappy, and then their relationships are going to end.
Yeah. And, you know, if you are a parent who indeed believes that your child is the be-all and the end-all for you, you're melding two different identities, and you're hampering your child, and you're hampering yourself too. And it's not a healthy dynamic. I know there was a book that was written by Shoshana Alexander a number of years ago. She's the founding editor of Utney Reader, her book In Praise of Single Parents, and from her research for her book, she said, of all the successful single parents I interviewed early on, they had decided to make their children the central focus of their lives.
Mm.
That's because we expect, you know, single moms especially, to sacrifice. Moms have to sacrifice, single moms especially, because God forbid that they date and have a sexual life.
But they could do that on every other weekend, you know.
Yes, but if you were married, the message is don't sacrifice for your kids. So we get a lot of mixed messages.
Well, and I think it's just because everybody's just really, like you said at the beginning, everybody's just really kind of uncomfortable and anxious about life in general. And I guess maybe the answer is that we just all need to take a deep breath and calm down.
That would be a really good thing.
Well,
I really would.
Yeah, but I think that research was really important, and I don't want to let it go by, and really want my listeners to understand that if you sacrifice for your child, it's not good for you, and it's also not good for them, which is why people are doing it. And I think that message is the one that really needs to get out there.
Yeah.
Much bigger.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, they talk about helicoptering parents, and there's lots of research on how unhealthy that is. And I understand the anxiety. Look, you know, It's
well, you're a parent. You understand it. I do, too.
Yes, and, you know, the economy is hard now for yeah. young people. And I understand that, yes, we need them to be educated so they can support themselves, with, you know, make a decent livelihood and all of those kind of things that we want to be able to have them have, the American
right.
dream. So I understand why parents get nervous, are anxious, want to get in the right sports and this and that. I can understand that, but I think really as a society we need to redefine what success is, and I don't
yes.
believe it's material wealth. It is finding meaningful work, to teach children
right.
to find meaningful work and to have connections, relationships, because that ultimately, when you're on your deathbed, those are the things
right,
that people
that matter.
Have regrets about.
Well, and I think that that's something that couples can do, that parents, adults, couples can do better, a better job of modeling,
mm-hmm.
Which, again, when the child becomes the center of the universe, that's not necessarily a good thing for anybody.
Right, right.
Well, Vicki, thank you so much for joining me and having this conversation. And I just want to let everybody know it's Vicki Larson. And Vicki, can you please tell them how they can find your wonderful book?
Oh, absolutely. Thank you. The book is called A New I Do, Reshaping Marriage for Skeptics, Realists, and Rebels. We are in bookstores. We're also on Amazon online, Barnes & Noble's online, and a few other online book outlets. And we have a website, thenewidobook.com, and my blog is OMG Chronicles. And
right.
thank you, Leslie, so much for having me on. It's always a joy to talk to you.
Well, I'm so glad you could be here, and I want everybody to be marriage rebels and put your relationships first, and not make your child the center of your universe, and keep listening to Happily Ever After is Just the Beginning, and until next week, stay loving.